This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. My guest today is the great investigative reporter Greg Pallast, who works for BBC and is the author of a couple bestsellers, including Armed Madhouse and The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Greg Pallast, welcome back to Progressive Radio.
Hey, Matt. Fantastic to be here.
It's great to see you. Let's talk about Obama and healthcare at the top. I was going back to your website at gregpallast.com, and I found something that you wrote shortly after his inauguration that was praising him for being a liar because you thought he had lied to the Republicans and the conservatives and was going to be less bipartisan than he had pretended to be and more progressive.
Yeah.
What's your take now?
Well, yeah, he originally came in, you know, bringing in kind of a snaky knuckle breaker like Rahm Emanuel, and people were shaken up. I thought, great. Mr. Nice Guy has an enforcer there, and when he said, I'll be bipartisan, then he tried very hard to ram a really very much needed stimulus bill down the Republicans' throats, and he pretty much did it. And so I thought, this is a sign of things to come. We might actually have a real progressive president who's going to stand up for something. I go, wow. You know, in fact, actually, I lost a lot of subscribers, gregpallast.com, because they don't read past the headline. Can't try irony in America. It's very dangerous. I don't know how The Onion does it. But
you can't do pun headlines anymore.
I said, Obama's a liar. Isn't that great? Because he was trying to be bipartisan. But he started out tough because he had to keep the economy's head above water. So that was great. But then he started reaching across the aisle. And especially when we got to healthcare.
What is that about this? Chasing after the mirage of bipartisanship. Is it a ploy or is he naive? What's going on?
No, I think just the opposite. I think it's getting a little cynical because it's not so much reaching across to the Republicans because he doesn't need their votes anymore, you know, and, you know, except for, you know, they obviously had to get rid of Ted Kennedy with prejudice. But the big problem is that he's reaching across to the money boys. He's reaching across to the financial powers within healthcare. That's what's really disturbing me.
And why is he doing that?
Well, okay, I can't reach into his mind except to say that maybe he's decided he better cut some deals. That suddenly it's suddenly realpolitik. Now, this is the guy, and this is really important. Here's the guy who stood up and said, you know, the Republicans had all these creepy meetings. And he named the lobbyist Billy Tozen. He said, you know, they had these creepy private meetings and cut a deal with Billy Tozen on the extension of prescription drugs in benefit in Medicare. And I'll never do that. I'm not going to play that game. I'm going to end the game. And what does he do? He has a secret meeting with Billy Tozen. Not even just – you'd think he would at least say, hey, keep that guy out of the room. He was in my TV ads. His team has secret meetings with Billy Tozen, and worse – cuts a deal with them, with big pharma, with the big drug companies, the big drug pushers, and he's even touting the deal that he's going to so-called save $80 billion.
Now, Greg Pallast, you were the first one that I read about who really dug into what that deal was about. What did you find?
Well, first of all, I'm an economist by training. In fact, I actually studied at the University of Chicago Billings Hospital. They actually do call it Billings, where Michelle Obama worked too, and studied economics there of health. So I said, $80 billion of what? The drug companies, we're supposed to be happy the drug companies are giving us an $80 billion discount? Well, I went into the data. This is over the next 10 years when we're going to spend $3.6 trillion, that's with a TR, trillion dollars on drugs. $80 billion, hey, thanks a lot, guys. Unless you went through George Bush's No Child Behind Left education program, that's 2%, 2.2%. We had a sleazy deal cut with the pharmaceutical industry to save 2%, not 2% below what we're paying now, but 2% off the astronomical increase that is projected. That's it.
And what would we have been able to save if the government used its power to get bulk discounts?
Yeah, you have to understand what Obama gave up. He said he didn't just say I would try. He said absolutely he will use the power of government to bargain for lower drug prices.
This was on the campaign trail.
This is and I have five different quotes. And you go to GregPallast.com, you can see this stuff. Five times said, we will bargain. We will not get away with this stuff where we don't bargain for drugs. The Veterans Administration does it and saves 30 to 40% on average on the drug bill for veterans. But now on Medicare and Medicaid and Medicare, we're not allowed to bargain. Obama gave up the 30 to 40% for the 2% to win over the pharmaceutical companies. And what's creepy about it is that they've agreed to put in do a $150 million campaign backing the Obama proposals because it locks in their big money and, in fact, provides insurance for people to buy more drugs. Big Pharma is going to collect big time. The question is the $150 million deal a payoff? If it is, that actually may even skirt the law. That's pretty creepy.
And the nicest way to spin this for him is to say, look, we never could pass any kind of health care reform if we didn't split the insurance industry from the pharmaceutical industry. Do you buy that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's cynical. I think that's the game that's being played in some way. I'll give him credit for one thing. You know, they didn't have to buy off Bush. They didn't have to offer him $150 million. They didn't have to cut a deal. He was already in their pocket, Big Pharma. So it looks like he's bought off the hospitals. The doctors are completely bought off. There'll be no cut in doctors' fees. And the hospitals, by the way, which are scheduled to suck up $26 trillion in the next 10 years, are going to get away. They've cut a quiet deal that no one's talking about that's just going to knock off 0.5 percentage point. So what he's done is he's basically opened up our checkbooks, get our not only government but personal checkbooks to lock in trillions for the doctors, the drug companies, and the hospitals so he can aim at the health insurance companies. So maybe that's smart. I find it quite creepy given that he was going to change the game and not play it.
Greg Pallas, what's to enforce the deal that he made with these drug companies? What if they said, forget about it, we're not even going to give you the $150 million or the 2% discount?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that they're willing to do it. It's so cheap for them. It's so cheap for them that the $150 million bucks compared to the trillions, literally trillions of dollars that they're going to collect because of this, they'll come across. I'm not worried about whether the snakes are going to come across with their side of the bargain. the problem will be that while he's pieced off everyone but the insurance companies, that we're going to pay way too high a price for the so-called savings, and we're not going to get what we want. I'm very, very concerned that this whole thing's going to implode.
Implode in what way? Will there be no bill whatsoever or no public option?
Well, public option, you can kiss that baby goodbye. That is gone. I stake my – you know, I – would be surprised if we have any bill, by the way. We'll get some Mickey Mouse bill that'll be something like no prior condition, because the insurance companies are pretty much going along with that if all insurance companies are in. The problem is, for me, is that we may end up with the worst of all worlds in which there is a mandate. In other words, you're going to by law be required to buy insurance, which, by the way, Obama campaigned, say, I will never agree to a mandate that you'll be forced to buy from these creepy insurance hawkers from Aetna and AIG and the rest of the gang. But you won't get any particular discount. In other words, there won't be any value. In other words, they're going to get everything because you'll be forced to buy their product, but you won't have the protections that you need when you're forced to buy it.
And won't they just jack up their prices?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because it's also, remember, it's not, as Obama says, like auto insurance where you have to buy auto insurance because you don't need to buy a car. You know, and a lot of people don't. They say, hey, insurance is too expensive. You can't say, man, the insurance is too expensive, so forget that new kidney I need. You know, you can't do that. There is no free market in insurance. You can't say, gee, oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't have pancreatic cancer because I can't afford it this week. Can I just have a broken arm? Uh-uh. There ain't no free market in medicine.
And to the extent, Greg Pallas, that he gets the government or the Congress to agree to let the government subsidize those who are too poor to buy insurance, that subsidy can go essentially directly to the private insurance companies.
Right. I'm very concerned that we're paying them off to do the right thing.
That the government can do better and cheaper.
That the price will be too high. I'm very concerned. Look, my thing is, while I have a background as an economist and in health, I'm an investigative reporter, and I feel like we've had pretty much a fourth estate, which is not watching these backroom deals, and they're not giving enough coverage. I mean, they're praising it. They're praising the deals without going into what's going on behind closed doors. I want to know what else has been agreed to. When you have these secret meetings and you have these agreements, and I actually saw a memo from one of the agreements, great investigative reporter Ryan Grimm, big up to him, got it. I want to know what's in those meetings. I want to know who's in them, what's been promised, and what we're going to have to pony up.
Didn't Obama say those meetings would be televised on C-SPAN?
They were. Oh, you didn't get it on C-SPAN? Yeah, well, I mean, that I'm laughing, but he did say it four times. It's actually not a joke because that's really the heart and soul of his campaign, that this was going to be a different presidency. And they really went into detail in these private meetings, according to these memos. I mean, it was extreme detail on with the pharmaceutical companies, for example, drawing up their exact terms. Same with Chip Kahn, the chief lobbyist for the American Hospital Association. You know, I don't know what deals have been cut. I don't know what we're obligating ourselves to, and that's kind of creepy.
The individual mandate, too, that is an insurance industry idea. That came straight out of the insurance companies. So the larger question, though, I mean, we're looking at this cynically, and I think properly so. But the larger question for progressives, and I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, you're listening to Progressive Radio, my guest is Greg Palast. The larger question is, how does power work in this country? And do you have to make these kinds of sleazy, cynical compromises, or was there another way?
Yeah. Well, actually, the founder of the Progressive, Bob La Follette, said that there was another way, which is and we kind of showed the other way, which is that there really was a popular uprising that put this guy into office. Okay. Obama did not lead a movement. He bubbled up to the top of a movement which had a revulsion against the Cheneyism of 8 years of policies being determined in the dark in a bunker. You know, the question I have is, if we were repulsed and the nation was, you know, was just sick to its stomach over meetings between the oil companies and Dick Cheney, which appears to have secretly gotten us sucked into a war. How is it better if Obama's in the bunker with these guys? I mean, are we being Cheneyed? And is the difference just the 2% that we get off of the pharmaceutical companies? I'm very, very concerned. There is no reason for him not to activate, and for ourselves as progressives not to reactivate, the movement that created Obama. In other words, why is it – I have a real simple question. Why is it that there's all these pictures of all these right-wing guys screaming at these town hall meetings? What happened to the left-wing guys? What, we don't know how to do a demonstration? We don't know how to make noise? I mean, what happened to the movement? It's like, okay, we elected this guy, and it's almost like we hired him to do our work. Now we can go back to sleep. I don't know. I think that's not the way to do it.
Greg Palast, I was talking with a Vietnam vet who's with Vets for Peace, and he said, you know, what if Martin Luther King Jr. had been president? He would have called for 3 million people to march on Washington for universal health care. He would have mobilized the base.
That's right. And look, the big problem, of course, is not the Republicans, but within his own party, which means is that we need a movement. Obama, it's not a question of whether Obama's being good or a good boy or a bad boy, or whether he's living up to his campaign promises. I don't think anyone expected him to live up to campaign promises. I'm sorry if I'm a cynical cat as a journalist. But what is surprising to me is the way the movement just kind of evaporated. And it really was a movement that grew out of the
Well, was it a movement or was it a phenomenon? I mean, I think there was a bit of it being a phenomenon surrounding Obama. I do think there is this tremendous energy, as you're pointing out, Greg Palast, to get rid of Bush-Cheneyism. And I think there was a strong youth movement to say, hey, old farts, let's get past this racism in this country and let's elect the first black person in the White House. So I think all those things, but did that really constitute a movement? I'm not even sure about that. And certainly it's not a movement now.
Well, it had many elements. But let's not forget that the reason why Hillary, for example, lost was not just because Obama has a charming smile and great pecs. It has to do with the fact that Hillary cynically supported the war in Iraq and wouldn't get off it. Okay, it was the same. She was part of the old politics. But it wasn't just style. It was substance. It was bullets and blood. And this guy was really seriously promising something else. He had a substantive message besides the glitz and the great poster. There was a strong, strong progressive message which carried him forward. And
There's an anti-corporate message, too, against the bank bailout, too, at least at the beginning.
Yeah, let's not forget that the implosion of the Republican campaign was in part because of the revulsion against what the banks and the investment bankers had done to take down our economy. And he was going to do something about it. He came in like gangbusters. Well...
Yeah. And the crazy thing about that, you talked about the mainstream media's failure to look into the deals in healthcare. Now the same mainstream corporate media is applauding Bernanke, Geithner, even Henry Paulson, for God's sakes, for being, you know, the wise men who saved us from total disaster when they were the idiots who got us into total disaster.
Well, in fact, what I'm concerned about is that we're not out of the disaster. When Obama gave his big speech before Congress on healthcare, he talked, you know, he began by talking about how we saved the country from financial ruin with the stimulus bill, et cetera. And he talked about it like it was all over with. While the unemployment is rising to its highest level, over 10% in reality, foreclosure, 6 million people, families are facing foreclosure, 2 million more than when Obama took office. He said a total failure on these fronts. And yet that speech, all it was missing was the banner behind him that said mission accomplished. On the economy.
Actually, his proposals during the campaign on foreclosures were less progressive than Hillary's. Hillary was calling for a freeze on foreclosures.
Well, in fact, he ultimately did. I just looked it up recently. He actually said he was going to adopt the Hillary proposal of a 90-day moratorium. Look,
What happened to that?
You tell me. We ended up talking about we have millions of people losing health insurance because they're losing their jobs, and yet we're talking about deals with the drug companies. The economy is still floating face down in the swimming pool. And the guys who are responsible, this was not natural causes. This was a killing done by a bunch of financial killers. And unfortunately, without question, the most disappointing thing we've had from the Obama administration is the economy is put in the hands of Larry Summers, who's the grease eminence behind the whole economic policy. And this is – Larry Summers was the guy that deregulated the finance industry under Clinton. Yeah, of course, Bush let him run amok, but that's not surprising. You when you remove all the stop signs and people start speeding, it's really not a surprise. And that has not stopped. That has not changed. The foreclosures are rolling on. The bonuses are up. The markets are up. But
– and there are no new stop signs.
Yeah, and that's – that's the biggest single problem, is that we have not used the power of government, and there has not been, again, the follow through of the public uprising and revulsion that to organize into a mass to stop this from happening again.
Greg Palast, I can't tell you how many times someone comes up to me and says, you know, what happens to these guys when they become president? Do they go into a little room and the powers that be come out and say, look, fella, this is how the system works, and if you don't do something for the special interests, remember JFK, as if JFK was the
right, the old Bill Hicks line. They just show him the Zapruder film with Kennedy's skull flying backwards, and they say, and the bankers say, any questions?
So how do you respond to that?
Well, the problem is if you're surrounded by wolves, right, if you're running with the pack, you know, you lie down with dogs, you wake up with fleas. If your economic team are jackals like Larry Summers, Timmy Geithner, the leftover Bush baby, and the Rubin rejects, Ben Bernanke. I mean, if you look at these characters, and they're still playing games, more secret meetings with the banks, etc. What do you expect to happen? If that's all you're getting, you're not getting. I mean, I just did a piece for BBC and to my new film, Palast Investigates, where there's a guy, Robert Pratt, in 8 Mile, Michigan, you know, above Detroit. The guy's losing his house to a countrywide mortgage. He does work 7 days a week, actually, at a union job. And it's not that he's one of these, you know, they say these people can't afford their, you know, shouldn't have gotten loans. Baloney. He had one of these sharky subprime, needless to say he's black, subprime loan where the interest rates went from 4% and 5% to 11%. That stuff has got to end. Actually, Hillary called for ending those what's called explosive interest rate clauses in those loans. Those are predatory loans. Another guy was going to bring a national suit, Elliot Spitzer, to end predatory lending practices. Why isn't the Federal Reserve, the controller of the currency, the FDIC, and the others, they have the authority to end this under the TARP program. We have the checkbook. It could have been stopped.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, when we're giving hundreds of billions of dollars out of our pockets to these bankers and trillions of dollars in guarantees to them, we could have said, in exchange, fellas, you've got to put a hold on the foreclosures and stop the interest rate jacking up. But there was none of that.
That's right. Now, keep in mind, before the government wrote a check for a couple billion to General Motors, they required that the retirees of General Motors give up their legal right to retirement health benefits. Talk about a reversal on health care. We lost all those retirement health benefits for those retired workers at GM. No money unless the workers gave up their benefits. So $175 billion for AIG, the biggest insurer on the planet, why didn't they say, okay, here's what we want. We want certain advantages on health care, by the way. We want an end to the games on derivatives. Why was it that you had these companies continuing to gamble with our money? I just looked at J.P. Morgan's balance sheet. $80 trillion, $1 trillion in derivatives still on the balance sheet. Okay. Why don't we say, we're giving you the money, but what we want is our economy back. By the way, China did that. China seized all its banks, gave them money, and said, now you're going to lend it out. For every dollar we give you, you got to lend out 10. And their economy is booming. And it has nothing to do with the fact they make trinkets for Walmart. It has to do with they actually took control of their banks and made the banks go back into the business of cheap loans.
I'm speaking with Greg Palast. What else is in this film Palast investigates?
Too much. I mean, because there's a lot of evils out there. This is a compilation of my investigations for BBC television and Democracy Now. And, it includes, for example, I went into the rainforest in Ecuador to meet with the rainforest people who are getting their kids are dying. You should see these kids and these people.
This is the Texaco Chevron case.
Texaco Chevron. And I went in, 60 Minutes ultimately picked up the story, but they do Greg Palast light. They literally repeated our shots, but they left out key things, including the fact that when I took the reports of the childhood leukemia in the rainforest to Chevron itself, okay, their people, literally, their lawyers are saying, What's the big deal? Kids get cancer all the time. Oh, well, if in its oil, can you prove that it was our little piece of oil, it's our oil that's sitting all over the place? You should see this junk all over the place. Miles and miles of crud. It's this cesspool in the Amazon. It's disgusting. And so that's one of the things I do is take you into, not only the rainforest, but one thing I do as a reporter that is really not done in America at all is I confront these guys with the evidence, with the material. I give them a chance to say their piece. But I also, if I have to, I'll chase them down the hall if they won't talk to me, whatever it takes. It's old-fashioned investigative reporting, gumshoe stuff. You go in, you get the inside documents. I also showed Chevron, and you'll see on the film Palast Investigates, you'll see like I show Chevron a document, an internal document saying to tear up, to get rid of all the internal company reports showing that they deliberately dumped oil sludge all over the Amazon. So I said, could you explain this? And they said, they'll get back to me. Yeah, right, they'll get back to me. So this is, so we take on Chevron. I take on the banks and Countrywide, so that there are several stories and several segments in there.
Do you have some New Orleans stuff in there too?
Well, we also have put out another film, Big Easy to Big Empty, which is very important to me. And because that is about the untold story of New Orleans. In fact, what I've done is, for a reason I'll tell you right now, I'm offering it free as a download at gregpalast.com, which we've never done because usually we want people to donate to our nonprofit fund for investigative reporting. But I want people to see this because what it has in it is a professor, the head of the Hurricane Center at LSU, who is also the chief technician for the state of Louisiana, told me on camera that George Bush knew, or the White House, he was very specific, the White House Situation Room knew that the levees were breaking. They did not tell the state. They did not tell the state police, the city, or anyone, because he was in the Hurricane Center with the governor and the state police. And the White House withheld the information that the levees were breaking. And I said, so what's the effect of that? He said, the bottom line is 1,500 people drowned. This guy blew the whistle on Bush withholding this information, and we just got word that now he's been fired.
What's his name?
His name is Dr. Ivor van Heerden. And I don't use the word hero very often, but he is heroic. He took on not only the Bush White House on this, but he said, look, one of the reasons we had hurricane that New Orleans drowned, it wasn't drowned, by the way, by Katrina, which went east of the city. Was drowned by a surge of water, which would not have happened if the oil industry hadn't chopped up the coast, which is the natural barrier that protected New Orleans for a century. And the oil industry destroyed that barrier and still destroying that barrier. And Chevron was one of the people he could point to. And Chevron, our same guys from Ecuador, crapped all over there. Whatever they do in Ecuador, believe me, they do in Louisiana. That's where they first practice it. And in Louisiana, so what I found out, why was this professor fired? The trick was they closed his center, Van Heerden's hurricane center, the top center for hurricanes in America. They're reducing it down, getting rid of him, and opening up a center funded by something called America's Wetlands, a nice green group. It turns out 100% of the money from this nice green group came from, you guessed it, from Chevron Oil. So Chevron Oil got rid of the big bad Dr. Van Heerden, the whistleblower. And I'd like people to hear Van Heerden, hear the people in New Orleans. And, you know, if you want to make a donation, great. But I really want people to see this. Big Easy to Big Empty. Go to gregpalace.com for it.
Greg Palace, how do you find these stories?
They jump at me. Sometimes I have that fun thing where the envelope comes over the transom. But as you'll see, like in the film Palace Investigates, I do a lot of old-fashioned investigative work, which I can't do for U.S. networks. Like, I do secret tape recording. I set up secret fronts. If I have to use a false front, I will. I get inside documents, and I'm not afraid of their denials. It doesn't stop me from doing the story. Like, for example, I got you'll see that I got the plans for the oil fields of Iraq that Bush was putting together before the invasion, which they said didn't exist. And which were put together with the oil companies, with James Baker's people. He represented Exxon. And what I do is they denied that there was ever such a meeting with oil companies and the administration putting together this plan. And when I quoted them in Harper's Magazine, the oil guys, they said, this isn't true. Greg Palace never spoke to us. We never said these things. And I said, so whose voice is this on this tape? I do secretly tape record. I'm sorry. In fact, I just got a nice new toy. I probably shouldn't say it on the air, but I figure these guys don't listen to a pen that does video. So, you know, whatever it takes, you know, yeah, I like it. It's really the old-fashioned kind of Sam Spade meets Edward R. Murrow type of investigative reporting. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, we've all benefited so much from your investigative reporting, Greg Palast, on New Orleans, on Chevron and Ecuador, on Obama and the pharmaceutical drug companies, on the stolen elections.
Yes.
And so I wanted to thank you for being my guest today. I wanted to encourage everyone who's listening to Progressive Radio right now to go to gregpalast.com and look at download Big Easy to Big Empty.
Yeah, absolutely.
For free, but also make a donation so Greg Palast can keep doing this great investigative reporting. Thanks for being my guest again today, Greg Palast.
You're the best, man. Thanks.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella, and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.